Hey, it's Richard. The 1000th episode of Run As Radio is coming up, and I want to do something fun. I'm inviting Paul Thurrott to hang with me while we answer your questions. Now all we need is your questions. You can email me your questions at info@runasradio.com or record yourself asking a question, and we'll make it part of the show. It can be a question about technology, about the show, or even a past guest. If I can, I'll get that guest to answer your question. If we can play your question on the show, we'll send you a special 1000th episode Run As Radio mug. Send your questions to info@runasradio.com. Thanks.
From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show 996, Copilot Adoption in Financial Services with guest Christina Wheeler. Recorded Monday, July 7th, 2025. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts, LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on X at x.com/runasradio.
Hi, this is Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Today, my guest is Christina Wheeler, who's a senior solution engineer for business applications at Microsoft, focusing on the financial services industry. Before she crossed over to the dark side all those years ago, she was an M365 consultant, but also a SharePoint person and spent some time with Dynamics. You're one of my people that I go to talk about actually being productive in business with this stack that Microsoft presents to us. Thanks so much for coming back.
Thanks, Richard. It's really great to be back.
Yeah. Now, you know, you consulted for a long time. What got you to go in?
Over 20 years. I was in a VDash role in 2021.
Right.
And that's when I was working. The person I was under is now on the PowerCat team, and I got brought in to help run the Power Automate RPR partner program.
Right.
And so I was working with PowerCat team engineering and all that stuff. And I got to tell you, started as a contract. That's when I got to experience the Microsoft culture.
Right.
And really got to get to know this part of the org, the stew, now MCAP's what Microsoft customer and partner solutions.
Right.
That's what it is now.
Yeah.
Right.
They changed that name every so often just to make it challenging.
Yeah, definitely. I drank the Kool-Aid if I'm speaking acronyms now.
Yeah.
It only took me a couple years. I got to experience the culture, and I think getting older and being in consulting for 20 years takes a toll.
Sure.
I mean, it was over 20 years. And you know what? Opportunity presented itself. And it just ended up being a good fit. And I'm glad I made the move.
And in some ways, you're still doing a similar job because you're working with finance and insurance primarily.
Yeah.
So
yes, I am. When I joined Microsoft, I had a rare occasion, I guess. I had a choice between two different teams, and both of the hiring managers were incredible. And it really came down to what made my decision was looking back at my career.
Mm.
Big chunk of my career has really been heavily involved in financial services as a consultant. So I understood the industry. So it just made sense for me to go the financial services route because of my past experience
Sure.
as a consultant.
Yeah, no, it makes total sense to me. And I'm definitely seeing more action for some of these technologies like Copilot in certain verticals. I had a great case study conversation a few shows ago with someone who was talking about the fact that the ability for LLMs to parse text means they were finding insurance policy options that they couldn't find before because they were getting the wording wrong on their searches. But the LLM search works so much better. They were saying, oh, no, there, you said, Sea-Doo, you actually mean, you know, watercraft.
Right.
And there is a policy for that. And they didn't find them before. And so literally affecting the quality of service they can provide to customers.
You know, I think you see the shift of, you said SharePoint. Mm-hmm. Came from the SharePoint world, was thrown in that product at the very beginning of the product. And, you know, we used to have your SharePoint implementations and searching for documents and things like that. And internally, you know, customers, financial services would have documents in SharePoint and doing that search, and you're dependent on that search. And then, but a lot of it, your users would have a hard time finding what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. So you'd have to have a refined search service. But now, you know, with Copilot, you know, seeing the shift in that, there's a couple of things I'm seeing. One is that now when users are asking questions, they're finding the answers they want. But then this is also showing some companies that their data was not properly locked down in SharePoint.
Right.
Because Copilot is exposing that.
Yeah, that seems to be the common theme, right? This make sure your data estate is in order. And it's like, that's like saying, make sure you're secure. Like nobody's data state's in order, but I guess there's only degrees of disorder.
There's the whole thing of it's exposing the oversharing.
Right. And the undersecuring.
Yeah. And the undersecuring. Mm-hmm. Because it's been, oh no, Copilot, this can't be right. It's like, no, this is open to everybody. That's why Copilot found it.
Yeah. It wouldn't have found it if it wasn't. Does that mean everybody needs some time with Purview? Is that really what this takes? Or how do you go about
Purview? Yes. Yeah. No, Purview. There's a couple of different things. You've got, I think Purview is extremely important, putting policies in place. I mean, we have very strong policies from the Microsoft side, and it comes down to your data. I mean, for everything, right? Your emails, your SharePoint data, your Dataverse data, your Power BI workspaces, your SharePoint sites, all of that. You know, having that stuff with policies in place and having it locked down to also help prevent oversharing.
Yeah.
Then on the Power Platform side, then you also have DLP policies that you can apply in the admin center to lock down, you know, what connectors do you want to allow people to be able to connect to as building Copilot agents or Power Apps and Power Automate flows.
And DLP policies being data loss prevention.
Yes, thank you. Data loss prevention policies, correct.
I know you're indoctrinated now, Christina, because you just rattle those acronyms off like nobody's news. But so Power Platform support, I mean, because the DLP is not specific to Power Platform, right? That those things have been around a long time.
Correct.
Or are there correct. Particular connectors that Power Platform counts on that need DLP support?
Well, so you have DLP from the data standpoint in Purview, right? Then you have, let's say I build a Power Automate flow where I want to connect to SQL Server. Well, you've got data loss prevention policies that you can put in place in the Power Platform admin side to say, maybe in this environment, we only want to allow them connect to the dev SQL instance or allow them to connect to the prod SQL instance. You can lock down the endpoints.
Right.
You could also combine, you know, have this, you have non-business and business grouping that you can do for your connectors. Mm-hmm. So you can decide to say, I have SharePoint, Teams, SQL, OneDrive, maybe group connectors together that those can only be used together. And then if somebody tries to use, let's just say Dropbox, and you don't have that in that policy, it'll be blocked because it's blocking it because you can't use that connector together.
Right. Okay. That makes sense.
So to help, so you can help lock down on where you're, you know, pushing and pulling data from and how it's going to interact with each other.
Okay. That makes, and that makes a lot of sense. And maybe we even need to step further back from this. You're talking about line of business types applications starting to adopt these technologies. Is there a smaller bite? Like I've talked in scenarios where the first Copilot was an HR Copilot just for employee use, where they took a very small set of data that was largely isolated and controlled, and the consequences of being wrong were annoyed employees, not big financial losses or things like that. Like it seemed like a very safe way to go, but the big value here is improving your line work.
Yes.
You got to get to that threshold.
Yes, it is. But that's what I've seen too in the very beginning of this. And it started on the Power Platform side. You had Power Virtual Agents, which is very controlled, no generative AI. It's just you control it by topics, you know, phrases and then topics. So there's a phrase, somebody asks a question or has this, you know, keyword that they say, and then it's going to trigger your topic and you control the output of that. And then, of course, you have generative AI now to help answer questions. But there's things you can do. You have it go towards only your data sources, mm-hmm. or you can have a search public knowledge. But what it was is people were starting out originally with just kind of HR helper agents,
yep.
right? And then shifting. So me being in financial services, what I was seeing is there's always this challenge with underwriting with both insurance and banking.
Sure.
Right? There's this whole process. And so there's a lot of manual work that's involved. But there's things that people are doing that is just very tedious.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is where Copilot can help in the whole autonomous agent side of, let's just say, a loan. You know, let's just do an example. I built this demo for a loan application, mm-hmm. like a mortgage loan app. On the mortgage loan app, you know, a lot of times you have an application come in and it's being checked. Well, and documentation's coming in, but someone's manually checking to see, okay, is this correct?
Right.
Well, you can now have Copilot have an automatic trigger to say, okay, we have this loan application come in, we have these documents that come in, and then through Gen AI, it's checking that to see, are there any anomalies?
Right.
Are the documentations correct? Is a name incorrect? Is there incorrect, you know, pay stub provided or something like that? And so to have these automatic checks, which then gets a message back to the loan officer.
So the loan officer is still calling the ball, but a lot of these checks are now automated.
Still calling the ball, automated. So then what happens is that flag comes up and the loan officer will see that. Said, okay, here's where the issues that were detected. And then the human in the loop, the loan officer goes and checks to confirm, is that in fact correct that there are these issues
right.
that need to be addressed.
That's cool because, you know, it's not software making the loan. It's software helping the person who's going to decide to make the loan
exactly.
make that decision more quickly.
Exactly.
By doing a lot of the fact-checking events. And so you're starting to branch out into using more data, not necessarily surfacing all the company's data. Like, it's financial services. There's a lot of laws here. There's a lot of regulatory bodies. You've got to be fairly careful. And I mean, in theory, you should already be fairly locked down just to be compliant. That should be good for a tool like Copilot to already live in a regulated regime.
Yeah. Well, and this brings us back to purview, having the policies in place. If you've got to deal with HIPAA compliance, right, or SOX or different things, there's the templates in there to apply to that data. And so it all kind of works together.
So, I mean, are you finding most of your customers are already using a tool like Purview? Like, they don't need to introduce Purview to be yes. able to,
correct.
When looking, it only makes sense because they are already living in a regulated regime where they need to demonstrate a certain level of data security.
Yep, exactly.
Interesting. Yeah.
And then now what we're seeing too on the adoption side of using the platform is, you know, banking. Some of our customers, they're not allowing Dataverse yet because it's got to get cleared through security first before they're going to allow it, or
right.
cyber, before they're going to allow it. But they have a plan in place to say, okay, this is what we're vetting this out. And then we're planning to have it approved and be able to use by this, you know, further on down the year. So it's having that plan in place because you have two things. You have some organizations that will have everything enabled and they're like, oh, wait, what? Okay, we got to turn this all off
yeah.
and the panic. And there's others is having a planned rollout saying, we know we want to use this. Let's plan this rollout. And so that we can make it scalable. We can upskill our administrators, upskill our makers, you know, and have a plan. So that way they can succeed from the very beginning.
Yeah. So Dataverse is a big jump.
It is. You know why?
But I can see once you've done that, it's a big empowerment too. Like now you've essentially, if you can get to a place where you're happy with Dataverse with Copilots, you have access to a fair bit of data. Like there's a lot of power there. It's just, is the main thing here just the security people doing the review? Like what are they pushing back on?
The review of it to understand the compliance behind it, mm-hmm. the security behind it and all that stuff. Understand how they can govern it and control it. And it's really just because it's new to a lot of organizations. They see Dataverse, they don't know, you know, they don't fully understand it.
Right.
And then to see, you know, how is that data stored? Where's mm-hmm. it stored? What's, you know, all of that stuff. And here's what I'm seeing. You've got a lot of organizations, whether it's Power App, our Automate Copilot Studio. Oh, let's just take Power, for example. Mm-hmm. Build a lot of processes using a Power App that has their backend database SharePoint lists.
Right.
Okay. I love SharePoint.
AKA how to make your Power App slow.
Thank you very much. That's it.
I hear this over and over again. And I think the main reason is because you already have rights to the SharePoint list. You don't have to ask anybody.
That's it. And it's included in your M365 license already, right? Your enterprise or your business license, which I get. But the thing is that I think SharePoint's great. I think it's great to build certain use cases on. However, if you need something scalable, this is where Dataverse is the better fit.
Yeah.
One thing you could never do in SharePoint is field level security.
Sure.
Column level security, right? You can do that in Dataverse. You've got real role level security. And what I saw on the SharePoint side is people would do security by obscurity.
Right.
Oh, let me build this Power App, but only show them this part of the data. Oh, but by the way, if they can get to the back end of the list, they're going to be able to get to all the records.
They got all kinds of things. Yeah, without a doubt.
Exactly.
Yeah, I did a show with Louisa Fries, who's an MVP a few weeks ago. And she talked about this whole idea of most Power Apps are built by an individual for their immediate problems. Then a bit of the team use it and it sort of grows. And at some point you have to commit to this needs to be real software.
Yep, exactly.
And real software has governance around it. And one of the things was get those SharePoint lists out of there.
Yep.
You know, make it go through DLP, make it go through Dataverse, get that security properly in place and monitoring it properly in place. So it doesn't look like it's just a view on a SharePoint.
Right. Well, the other thing too is large lists, right? Mm-hmm. If you have large amounts of data, this is where SharePoint struggles. But because SharePoint lists are not a database table, and that's how a lot of people will treat it. I did for a long time as a consultant.
Sure.
I did.
Yeah.
I still love SharePoint.
Well, and I don't think it's a failing that somebody does this with an experiment. It's you have to acknowledge that you've been successful now. People are valuing this and you need to grow up.
It's a difference between having a use case that's small and only a small subset's going to use versus something that's going to be large amounts of data and it's going to be heavily used with a lot of users and stuff. So it's really making it scalable. That's key.
Sure.
If you want it to be scalable, this is what you need to do.
Yeah.
But one of the things I've been helping with a lot of our customers is that coming from SharePoint, what I do like is there is the capability now inside the Dataverse so that you can easily create a Dataverse table from a SharePoint list, meaning where you're saying, okay, I want to create a SharePoint list from this or Dataverse table from this SharePoint list, and you can connect to the list and it'll create the physical table for you. Hmm. Now, there's two differences. There's a virtual table where I could just create a Dataverse table that's a live connection to my SharePoint list. And you can still use some of the Dataverse capabilities, mm-hmm. but there's limitations. And then there's actually converting a SharePoint list to a Dataverse table. And so we have that capability now to make it easier for organizations to move off their SharePoint list and bring it into Dataverse.
That's good. Well, thanks for making that easier for us too. But it speaks to, again, when you get to this certain level of success, you need to go down these hoops. And getting Dataverse into the equation makes a whole bunch of other things easier. And of course, now you're looking at buying more licensing anyway. Because you're clearly Power Apps are becoming important in your organization.
Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of times too, which is I help with our customers understand is, yes, I understand the whole, we've got this premium licensing, but when you have Power Apps per user or premium licenses, you get Dataverse capacity that is pooled.
Right.
You also get AI Builder credits. Same with Power Automate. Right. So, and then Copilot Studio. You know, Copilot Studio, you can use all the standard and premium connectors.
Right.
And so there's, you know, and with the Power Apps, you start leveraging that, you can build unlimited apps.
Right. Yeah. And so you have a heck of a lot more power available to you. But it just seems like one of those commits. And often the folks that are building these things are not the ones that are going to be able to go upstairs to talk about it. You need some admin support. Like this is when a sysadmin comes into play and says, hey, this is going on. It's clearly productive for people. We need some proper governance. We need the licenses set up right. We should move to Dataverse, like all of these things. And then you go down through that security checklist to get to this point, knowing you're building up a body of migration that you're going to have to do when the time comes, when you're sufficiently far enough down the path.
You know, and I tell customers, I said, architect around best practices, not around licensing.
Yeah, without a doubt. But also just the reality on the ground too, of we do tend to build software kind of spontaneously this way. And it's not a bad thing, right?
Yeah.
It's you do it the lowest cost way possible at the beginning.
Yep.
To see if it's valuable. Once it is valuable, well, then you got to go get more serious about it. And Christine, I got to interrupt for one moment for this very important message. This episode of Run As Radio is brought to you by the Next Gen AI Conference, which will be held at the Lowe's Sapphire Falls Resort in Orlando, Florida, from October 7th to 9th, 2025. Next Gen AI is a premier event dedicated to advancing generative AI development on Microsoft Azure. Expect to dig deep into the world of agentic AI. The conference covers a wide variety of AI topics, including implementing and tuning powerful multimodal agents with Azure AI Foundry and AI Agent Service, exploring the range of the latest large language models available from the model catalog and using the Model Inference Service, and leveraging the latest platform features and frameworks for orchestration, routing, and tool use. At the Next Gen AI Conference, you can expect keynotes and sessions from Microsoft engineers and leaders, and in-depth sessions and workshops from industry experts helping you get the most from this new wave of AI technologies. Listeners to Run As Radio can get a discount on registration by using the code RUNAS at AzureAIConf.com. The Next Gen AI Conference is October 7th and 9th, 2025 at the Lowe's Sapphire Falls Resort in Orlando. Register today at AzureAIConf.com. And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell. That's Christina Wheeler. We're talking a little bit about that the process of adopting Copilot in an organization. And some of this is plumbing. Some of this is those increments of first you tried an internal app. Now you're doing some modifications to workflow. Like, where do you go from there? Or is that as far as we've gone so far?
Prototyping is key.
Yeah.
That's what I tell users. That's what I tell our customers. Prototyping is key because, you know, the question is, do I build a Copilot agent? Do I build a Power App? Do I do this in Azure AI Foundry, right? All these questions.
Well, can we just talk about just how many tools they're here, right? Like, good Lord, right? There's the Copilot agents and Power Apps. There's Copilot Studio. There's the AI Foundry and the AI Studio. Like, how does anyone keep these things straight?
If you look at it this way, April Dunham had a very good presentation. I think it was at Build, and he had a presentation on the deck to show kind of M365 Copilot, Copilot Studio, and Azure AI Foundry. And you look at it, Copilot, you know, Azure AI Foundry is going to be your advanced pro coders, like hardcore. Right. Hey, we're going to use our, you know, we want to build our own LLM and do all this stuff. And then you've got the middle tier here on Copilot Studio. I mean, you could get very advanced with it, but you don't have to have that level of skills that are needed on the Azure AI side, right?
Right.
But then they come together because there's things that I think are perfect fit just to have an M365 Copilot. There are things that are perfect to be done in Copilot Studio standalone. And then there's things that it's a better fit in Azure AI Foundry. Mm-hmm. But what's happening is these are all coming together too, because you can build have your own models inside of Azure AI. And then in Copilot Studio now, I think this is preview right now, is you can now use your Azure AI Foundry models.
Right.
So there's this whole thing that's starting to come together.
And that only makes sense that the pro folks should be able to build things for the low code folks to be productive with.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So that's one of the distinctions here is, do you have AI in your title versus are you, you know, doing productivity things and more of that digital transformation side of stuff as to what kind of tools you're necessarily doing. I appreciate that they do keep changing the names because they're trying to differentiate them too. It just makes it part of the fun.
The biggest challenge I have is trying to explain, that's why I have slides that I show customers, is what are the different flavors of Copilot,
right?
You have GitHub Copilot, Copilot for Sales, which goes on top of Dynamics or Salesforce. You've got M365 Copilot. Then you have, it's just a bunch.
Security Copilot, like you name it. There's a ton of them. So, it's a constant battle to try and help folks understand. So are you getting to the point where you have, I mean, we've not talked about any customer-facing tools so far. It's been the loans officer has assistance. But where does that lie? Are you finding customers now that are ready to actually put these tools in front of their customers?
So there's a couple of things. One is public-facing. Mm-hmm. Really, really impactful demos that I've showed and that I've seen customers implement is, you know, websites, especially let me just talk about my insurance customers, right? Mm-hmm. You go on the website, customers looking for some information and they're dependent on the search results.
Right.
But now, and what Copilot works beautiful with is tying it up to your external facing website So you can have it just use your website knowledge, or just it'll you point it to your website, and then have it where the customer is asking questions. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, what insurance, you know, what are the services do you provide? And then it's answering Gen AI, it's using generative answers, so generative AI, to answer the question based upon the data it finds only on your website.
Right, which is useful and controlled, right?
Yep.
As long as your website information is correct.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, there's a fairly famous story that comes up every so often with Air Canada, where a agent bot was used by a customer to find the thing, to be told they would get a refund on a flight. So they made their changes. Then when they went to request a refund, it was denied and went all the way to court. And the court said, you use software in place of a service agent. If the service agent got it wrong, you'd still be on the hook. You're on the hook for the bot too, which I thought was good precedent.
I heard.
Right.
Like, yeah, it is. Yeah, absolutely.
But it speaks to, this is part of our responsibility in managing data, is that we make sure these tools give accurate answers.
Well, once again, too, really comes down to prototyping and testing.
Yeah.
That is key.
Yeah.
And understanding the features, because, you know, a lot of these settings have changed, the default settings, but you go and create a Copilot agent, it would have public knowledge turned on by default. And
right.
Someone creating that may not know that and then want to know, well, how come it's also answering this question, but that's not in my data? You said, well, let's go check the setting that you have here.
Yeah.
You have the general knowledge turned on.
Yeah.
You need to turn that off. And so it's really key to understand, be educated on the tools, which keeps changing. So mm-hmm. It's an ever evolving thing. But like I said, prototype, test and test
sure.
to make sure that it's the way you need it before you even put it in production.
Well, and we've been building bots before LLM showed up a couple of years ago.
Yep.
Right? They had their limitations. And so I don't know if the workflow is all that different per se. You still have essentially the same problem of, can you get results that are meaningful? Do you build good test cases so that you can work through what are likely questions, like, and can they be reasonably answered? And when do you escalate to a person?
The difference now, though, is before, yes, it was more controlled, mm-hmm. right? You're controlling the answers. Yes, you have your knowledge source. You're controlling the answers. Now you're having Gen AI answer the question. You're using generative answers to answer the question,
right.
Still using your data, but that's where it's, you know, like you said, yes, but it's key because
it's a bit non-deterministic. It's not always going to say it the same way.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah.
They'll ask the question, it'll answer. And then it'll, you know, ask the same question, it'll answer the question, but it might have had it phrasing a little bit different, where it's still saying the same thing.
Yes.
But it's different phrasing.
Yeah.
But then also the challenge is, what I have seen challenges is when people are going against SharePoint knowledge sources, mm-hmm. Documents. You know, there were some limitations on how many levels deep it could go.
Right.
There were limitations, you know, if they had very complex documents, you know, there's still some limitations with all the LLM
right.
trying to be able to go through these documents.
And are they searching through those documents in real time per request, or are there a daily reload process for new information being added? Like, how do we update the data that those tools use?
Well, so one of the things, because one of the challenges I had before is that you can ask a question in M365 Copilot and against your SharePoint data, and it's giving, exactly what you're expecting.
Right.
And then you have a standalone Copilot Studio agent that you built. You're asking same data sources, and you're asking the question, and it's different. And, or it's not giving the answer or finding it or something like that. And the challenge was that, or they'd say, why is it slower here and faster in M365
sure.
Copilot? And the reason behind that is because M365 Copilot uses what's called the semantic index.
Right.
Copilot Studio now has access to that, but there was a period of time that the semantic index was not available in your standalone Copilot Studio agents.
Okay. That semantic index rebuilds on a routine basis, or as it sees new documents arrive?
Yeah. So as long as you have an M1, so from what I understand, is as long as you have one M365 Copilot license, you will have a semantic index.
Right. And now you can make that visible in Copilot Studio to your own standalone Copilots aimed at whatever you want to aim at.
Your Copilot agent. So the difference is, if you have that turned off, it's relying on the graph
connection
to SharePoint, right?
Which is slower.
Exactly. As soon as you're able to, you know, plummet with the semantic index, then it's faster.
Okay. Well, and it does seem like those things are all going to work together then. Makes sense that it would use the same ones. as long as you get the boundary set around it. And then, you know, this leads into that next idea of how careful would you have to be adding new data that gets indexed that way that then changes the bot behavior? Like, do we start having, and I imagine we always have internal documents that the Copilot has no visibility to versus visible documents for the Copilot to use in public?
You know, that's a good question. Actually, differences you see is one of the capabilities you have when you're building a Copilot agent is uploading documents into the bot.
Right.
And there are limitations. If you have, that's when you upload it, it's actually uploading it to Dataverse. And so it's indexing it in Dataverse.
Right.
You cannot have confidential tagged documents. It will not work. But you can't upload that.
Well, you can upload them, but they won't be available to the Copilot.
They won't work to the Copilot, yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, that's a good point. It's like, as long as you got tagging set up, everything that's still a proposal so forth can be tagged in a way that the Copilot will never look at it. And once it becomes policy, then you change the tag and it gets indexed.
Well, so here's what happens. It's just because it's locked down data. So there's a difference between using Copilot to search documents that are actually in SharePoint or a different knowledge source, or let's say in SharePoint. So you have the policies in place, right? So that user is still only going to get results based upon the documents they have access to. Now, if you upload a document to the agent, that doesn't go off permissions there. It's not saying, hey, this only these users can be able to search the data from this document in the agent. You're saying, I want to just go ahead and upload this document as a knowledge source into this agent so that anybody that asks questions to it can actually get an answer from here. But that's why that confidential policy will not work.
It might be a duplicate document, but at least it's a clear line between this is what the bot can see and this stuff the bot can't see.
It's not really the bot, it's based on the user.
Right. And the
yes, okay, correct.
And the bot is a user.
Because the bot is a user.
Yeah,
correct. That's why the bot cannot see
right
in with any confidential documents that you upload.
My goodness, so the number of shows I've now done on application identities, the bot's a user. Well, this is one of the reasons, right? So that we can see clearly you can give rights to that identity that tool relies on. And that's how it decides what it can see.
Yeah. Well, and you have, once again, it comes down to connectors. Mm-hmm. I have an agent that's connecting to ServiceNow, and I have one that connects to Salesforce, and I set up single sign-on for Salesforce. And so my Copilot agent is actually using single sign-on.
Right.
Now for the single sign-on, I actually had to configure manual authentication to be able to support that. And I had to do configuration on the Salesforce side too, but it works beautiful.
Yeah.
So it still goes based upon that logged in user's account. And then it's only going to retrieve the data based upon what they have access to.
What their privileges are. See, then this is part of the conversation having with security about these tools. It's like each of these globs of software can have its own identity. We can set rules around what it can access. You know, there's no voodoo here. Applications are not all powerful.
Yeah, pretty much. There's a lot.
Unless we choose to make them that way, and you shouldn't.
Exactly.
But I'm excited to hear you're having success with customers with this because, you know, there's lots of places where it doesn't seem to be going all that quickly. And we're talking about an industry as conservative as financial services. The fact that they're making progress speaks to, given sufficient diligence and a follow through this workflow, you can get there and get results.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I'm surprised with how I did not expect it to pick up as much as it did.
Interesting.
But what it came down to is prototyping.
Yeah, prototyping.
All of my financial services customers.
Showing the productivity benefit too, yeah. I imagine. As soon as they could see the ROI, as soon as that loans officer is looking in, 80% of the things they were needed checked is already flagged as checked and passed. So they can just focus on the things that aren't done. Boy, that's addictive. I'd want that in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny because I was very hesitant with AI in the beginning. And I'll tell you what, I am so dependent on Copilot now, just even from customer meetings. Before I would live in OneNote and I would take notes of every meeting.
Yes.
But now, as long as the customer allows us to record, now it's hard when they're not, because now I'm back to having to retain everything and make notes, right?
Taking notes, yeah.
But I'm so used to Copilot taking notes now, as long as we can transcribe, it's really helpful. And I think it makes the meetings more impactful because now I can focus on the conversation rather than focusing on making sure I capture everything.
Yeah.
Because that all will be, you know, captured.
Sure.
You know, Copilot will generate those notes for us.
Well, and like I've been in the situation where we've had a note taker doing a summary of the minutes for a meeting. And then when they're reviewed, it's like, this is not what we talked about. The fact that you can have a verbatim transcript that then is summarized, and when you're not happy with the summary, go back and check the verbatim transcript. Like, all this stuff is very powerful for keeping, you know, to the truth. We battle this stuff all the time.
It is. And I have really bad ADD, so it really helps me keep prep for meetings.
Yes. But to be more engaged in the meeting. Oh, I got to jump on this call. You know, that's going to help you a lot. And then you have that transcript and that summary. So, there's a downside to taking all those one-note notes, Christine. It's the same thing I've got. You got to go back and read them.
You know? Thank you very much. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. These tools are really helping to actually stay focused on the things we need to get done. And it's great to see some progress being made because it's about time. And are the ROI is going to be where it's at? Maybe we've given some folks some views on steps to take to start being successful with it.
Yeah, no, that's good.
Yeah. Christina, always fun to talk to you. Thanks so much for spending the time with me.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.